Welcome to the Norris Group's Real Estate Radio Show. Hosted by author, investor, hard money lender, and real estate educator, Bruce Norris. Equipping California real estate professionals for tomorrow's challenges.
Hi, this is Bruce Norris. Thank you again for joining us. Once again today, we are joined by Bill Gatton. He is one of the few true in the trenches creative financing teachers who actually practices what he preaches. A highly successful real estate investor and much sought after national speaker, Bill's most recent book of many on the subject is the very comprehensive, humorous, and irreverent, Making It Big in Creative Real Estate and Keeping It This Time. Bill, thank you again for joining us.
It's my pleasure, Bruce.
You know, I think what you just said in that the intro that I read was keeping it this time. A lot of us went through this before, and it's a big advantage. There's a lot of people that are seeing this happen for the first time to them, and I think they're taking it pretty hard. What do you think?
Well, I think you're right. I think people suddenly come upon something that's making them wealthy for the moment. They presume it's going to last forever.
Absolutely.
And unfortunately, that just doesn't happen. And all of a sudden, you're looking back saying, gosh, I wish I could see another good market, or I wish I could see another down market so I could really do it right this time.
Well, you have your wish. With 5% or 6% financing, too.
That's right.
Actually, you know, we talked a little bit about last time where the existing financing on the homes you were going to get calls from was higher than the current rate. I would bet in 2 or 3 years, it'll be just the opposite. You'll have a higher mortgage percentage that's the current market in, let's say, 2010 and 2011, and you'll have all these loans at 5 and 6% with maybe no equity. I would think that you'll probably be busier than you could ever imagine.
Well, we're getting that way now just because of what's happening in the market. We're in a position where a down market or depressed market actually helps us in what we do because we have so many solutions for the people who are suffering because of it.
When, let's say, I run an ad and say I buy properties and I have a conversation, it seems like it's going to work. You suggest that we get a non-exclusive option. Can you give me an idea what that is?
Well, the non-exclusive option that we use merely says we want an option to buy your property without having to buy it if we don't want to. And I'd like to have that option for 30 days or 45, 60 days. And at the end of that time, then I'll go ahead and either exercise my option or relinquish it. But in the meantime, it's non-exclusive to the extent that if you find a better offer than I'm offering you, feel free to take it and terminate the option. Just give me a 5-day notice.
So
what happens in a case like that is if I'm advertising the property for 2 weeks and the person calls and says I want to cancel the option, it's okay with me to do that. But even if I didn't want it to happen, I still have 5 days to get my buyer and exercise the option.
Okay.
But if in my particular case, I don't recommend everyone does it my way, somebody wants to cancel the option, I just figure it's a problem looming up that I can avoid anyway.
Yes. That's probably a good antenna that you've developed over the years. The difference between an Illinois land trust and what you call the two beneficiary PAC trust, what's the basic difference in the two?
Well, that question is one we get constantly, all the time. But it's like saying, what's the difference between an engine and a Lincoln Navigator?
Okay.
Because what we do is we use that engine. In other words, the engine for the PAC trust or the net trust is a simple Illinois land trust for all practical purposes. It's modified a little bit, but it's basically an Illinois land trust. That's the engine. So there is no difference to speak of between our Illinois land trust and somebody else's. But what we do is we add to the land trust. In other words, we add to it an assignment of beneficial interest, a beneficiary agreement, a triple net occupancy agreement, power of attorney, and so on. So by adding these features to it, we're building the vehicle that's powered by that land trust engine.
If I was a seller and I said, I'd like to run this by my group of trusted advisors, mm-hmm. What would probably be his team's response?
Well, the team's response probably be, well, I don't know anything about this, and as a result of my not knowing anything about it, there's probably something wrong with it, so I'd advise that you do something else.
Okay. In a market like this, where it's tough to sell and you have no equity, let's say, what would the other suggestions be?
Well, I don't know. the only option somebody has in a situation like that, if they can't sell the property traditionally, they're going to have to do it non-traditionally. And if they do anything that is non-traditional, it's going to carry lots of pitfalls and downsides. For example, whether you're talking about a lease option, an equity share, a wraparound, a contract for deed, or any of those so-called creative financing devices, they all have the downsides. There's the inability to evict an errant tenant because of equity claims. There's the probability that anybody's liens and lawsuits and marital disputes and judgments are going to attach to the property. There's the due-on-sale violation, and every one of those, including the lease option, there's a violation of the lender's due-on-sale clause, allowing the lender to call the note immediately due and payable anytime they want to. So if somebody wants to avoid those downsides, but still accomplish exactly the same end result plus a lot of added benefits, then they'd use our program, the Equity Holding Trust Transfer, because it doesn't entail a due-on-sale violation. It doesn't entail the ability of an errant tenant in a property to hold you up forever with an equity claim and so on. Liens and suits and judgments cannot attach to the property. So it's the only way to go if you're going to do it right.
How does it avoid the due-on-sale clause? I need to, and I surely need to get that on tape so I can listen to it a few times myself.
Yeah, sure. Well, the due-on-sale clause is the subject of the Garn-St. Germain Act,
right,
in 1982, the Federal Depository Institutions Act. And what it says very clearly, as one of the exclusions in the bank's ability to foreclose, is that a borrower in any state, federal, or private loan can place its property anytime it wants to into an inter vivos trust, as long as the borrower remains a beneficiary, and as long as the trust is revocable, and as long as the trust document itself doesn't convey any occupancy rights to anyone else. That's not to say that you can't lease the property that's in trust with another document.
But correct.
Those are the premises that are the Garn-St. Germain Act. So as a result, placing your property into a land trust and then remaining a beneficiary for some percentage of ownership while someone else becomes another beneficiary and leases the property from the trust does not violate the due-on-sale clause, even though that second beneficiary is entitled to 100% of the income tax write-off on the mortgage loan, 100% of the write-off for property tax, and so on.
Now, that sounds perfectly understandable the way you just described it. Why is that met with such questioning that can't be right?
Well, I don't. We're getting past that point. I used to have fights every day with attorneys across the country who said, well, you can't do an Illinois land trust only works in Illinois, which is not true. And I'd get this thing about, well, I don't care what you say, if you put a property in a land trust and transfer the beneficial interest, you are violating the due-on-sale clause, which is true if you transfer the beneficial interest and don't have any left over. But if the owner of the property, the borrower of record, retains a beneficial interest, then there is no due-on-sale clause violation. And that's difficult for somebody to analyze it that carefully.
Is there a percentage of beneficial interest they're supposed to retain, or does say?
Not as far as the due-on-sale clause itself is concerned, because what Garn-St. Germain says is as long as you remain a beneficiary.
Right.
Now, as far as the IRS is concerned, if you're going to take a tax write-off on any entity that you own a part of, you need to own at least 10% of it before you can claim it as a tax deduction. And it needs to be occupying, most of your working time and so forth. So in a land trust, we recommend that you never own less than 10%, and that'll take care of the due-on-sale issue, but it also takes care of the IRS issue and gives you a right to income tax write-off. And also, from an insurance standpoint, the insurance company is going to want to know that you have, if we're going to take the borrower's insurance and convert it to a non-owner occupied policy, the insurance company is going to want to know that that person they're insuring has an insurable interest in the trust.
Okay.
So that's where the 10% comes in.
Okay. Let's talk about that insurance for just a second. Can the trust just become an additionally insured?
Well, the trust should be an additionally insured, but typically what's going to happen, especially with title insurance, the title insurance company is not going to insure the trust. The title insurance company and the knowledgeable hazard insurance company are only going to insure their insured, the individual, the person. But by federal law, that any insurance on the property has to inure to the trust once the property's, inure to the beneficiaries once the property's placed into an inter vivos trust. So if Bruce Norris has insurance on a house today, and it's a rental property, or, well, let's say Bruce Norris is living in the house, he puts it in a land trust, and then he appoints me as his co-beneficiary. Well, I want to be insured. Well, what has to happen at that point then is that the insurance is going to be changed from homeowner's insurance to non-owner-occupied landlord's insurance.
Okay.
And then I move into the house and I get tenant's coverage for my personal possessions. And the insurance stays in your name, but I pay the premium as a part of my aggregate monthly payment every month.
How many things are negotiated when you have a transaction? It sounds like there's a lot of things that are going to come into play. Percentage of beneficial interest to the original settlor, is that something that's changeable in every transaction?
That can be a negotiable thing. But typically, if I'm dealing with someone whose objective is just to get rid of the house and forget about it,
right,
I'm going to insist that they retain a 10% beneficial interest in the trust to avoid the due-on-sale violation, avoid insurance problems, and so on. However, there might be someone who has significant equity in the property who says, I'll do this, but I want 50% of everything you make. Well, if it's profitable enough for me to do that, then I certainly would allow myself to be negotiated into that position. Even less sometimes. If there's $150,000 worth of equity in a $300,000 house and the guy says, I'll give you 25% of it, that might be okay with me too. So, all of those facets and factors are negotiable. The value of the property at the time, the monthly payments, the percentage of beneficial interest, the term of the agreement, and so on.
If the original settlor gets 10% of the beneficial interest, do they also automatically get 10% of all the other goodies, or could that be negotiated in different percentages?
Well, that's also negotiable.
It is, okay.
In a typical transaction, I'm going to have that settlor keep the 10% interest until the end of the trust. In other words, he'll give me 90% of the beneficial interest today and then agree to give me the other 10% after I've paid off the loan and ready to take the property. So when he forfeits that 10% at the end, he's also forfeiting his claim to any profit. And here again, someone who wants to negotiate, and it happens to me frequently, is they will say, well, I'd like to have 10% of the future profit. And in a case like that, then we just don't include that relinquishment paragraph, so that at the end of the agreement, all of the beneficiaries are going to receive a share of the net profit on sale that is in proportion to the percentage of beneficial interest they own in the trust.
What do you think the goal originally for the seller is that typically calls you guys up? What is their primary objective?
Well, their primary objective is getting rid of the house. But a lot of times the question we get from a seller is, well, that sounds great, but what's in it for me? And whether we're calling them or they're calling us, what's in it for them is the opportunity to get rid of the property and not have to hassle with short sales and foreclosures that could impact their income tax and so forth severely, and also not have to go through one of these other seller-assisted financing arrangements that can result in due-on-sale problems and liens and suits and judgments against their property and so on. So the benefit to the seller is always going to be getting rid of the property in a most effective way, as long as they're willing to wait for the preponderance of their cash for another 5 or 6 years. And we just had one this morning where the person has a $300,000 house and he only owes $3,000.
Okay.
In a case like that, we just tell him, you know, why don't you do this? Rather than giving us the property and letting us take over your $3,000 a month payment and paying you the rest of it monthly, why don't you refinance the property? Pull out all the cash you want, and we'll take over the new payment. That way you can have all of that cash out on the refi tax-free until the trust terminates. And at that time, then you could use your 1031 exchange ability to still not have to pay tax on the gain.
So if I sell a property inside of a trust, it is not a taxable event until the end of the business of the trust?
Well, remember, you're not selling the property. You're
okay.
Putting the property into an inter vivos trust and not selling it.
Am I donating it? How does that?
No. You're just setting up a trust and appointing somebody else to be your remainder agent in the trust as the co-beneficiary.
Okay.
And then that co-beneficiary then leases the property from the trust.
Okay.
Now, the IRS will look at that and say, they're not concerned about being a sale or not a sale, but they'll look at it and say that that person living in the house qualifies under IRC, Internal Revenue Code, Section 163, H4D, because they have the risk and burden of possession, they have a contractual obligation to pay, they have an equitable interest in the trust that has the equitable interest in the property, and as a result, then they qualify for full income tax deduction and income tax write-off of the property tax, even though there's been no sale and there has been no purchase.
You and I probably have gotten the same phone calls and taken them in different directions for many years. Usually, and I think you're one of the few people that I would say probably has put together tons of transactions that I probably said I can't do anything for you.
Sure. That's why I like doing seminars with you.
Buying subject to is kind of the transaction that would be closest. And when I talk to that seller, they have a wish list and they have a have-to list. And the wish list is I want my loan assumed or I want my loan paid off. But when it boils down to a transaction that works, the have-to list is I have to get off a next payment. Mm-hmm. Is that the same person you're talking
sure.
to?
Same person, except we have different solutions.
Right. You have different solutions that keeps them kind of in the playing field and probably makes them feel a lot better, too.
Well, what makes them feel better is that they can be in the playing field if they wish, but if they want to be just completely divorced from the hassles and the headaches and move to Poughkeepsie next week, they can. They don't have to ever be contacted again. They will give me a power of attorney to vote their interest in the trust and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
And then when the property is ready to sell at the end of the trust, they've already directed the trustee, go ahead and sell it and for the best price. And distribute the funds to the beneficiaries in proportion to whatever the percentage of ownership is, and I hereby relinquish my percentage of ownership at that time.
If I ran an ad that I bought houses in today's market, I would think 95% of my calls would be people that owed more than their house was worth. And that one is, you know, I definitely don't deal with it,
yeah,
and you do.
Sure.
Okay. And the low interest rates probably really is a big factor in that working.
You know, believe it or not, the calls that we get on those kinds of ads, there's only about 40% of people who are over encumbered.
Okay.
Most of the calls we get are people with minimal equity, marginal equity, but only maybe 30-40% of the people actually have loans greater than the value of the house. Now, that's changing.
Yes.
As we go, because now houses are getting less and less and less, and loans are getting more and more and more.
That's right.
So we're starting to get a lot more people who are over-encumbered. But here's what we teach. We teach that the equity in a property, when you pick it up, unless you're going to sell it in a week and a half, it really doesn't matter. When you buy stocks and bonds, there's no equity in those stocks and bonds when you buy them. You buy them in anticipation of them being worth more in the future. So if I get a house that's worth $300,000 and there's a $320,000 loan on it, and I'm going to keep it for 7 years, I don't care about that. As long as my payments are reasonable in the meantime, that house is going to be worth $420,000 7 years from now. So regardless of how over-encumbered it is, I'm going to make some money on it if I hold it long enough. And then there's eight other profit centers. I won't go into them all now, but, I mean, you've got positive cash flow. You've got the money they give you to get into the property. You've got the money the seller gives you to get out of the property. You've got the potential for future appreciation. You've got the equity buildup from principal reduction in the mortgage loan. You've got the money you get from being able to give them the income tax write-off and so on. So there's a pile of benefits other than just equity. So that's why in our program we don't really care whether there's any equity in the property or not.
When we did our last seminar together, you talked about a new program that you're working with getting builders, getting rid of their inventory.
Yeah.
Let's talk a little bit about that, because I actually think it's time for me to run a pretty good size ad that we buy builders finished inventory.
Sure.
And trouble is I would like to know how the best to get rid of it.
Well, what we can do right now is this. We've got a meeting coming up in Las Vegas this week, and the gentleman has 33 unsold townhouses in a complex of 40 that he built. His construction loans are coming due now.
Right.
He doesn't know what to do.
Right.
So now that his construction loans are coming due, he has no way to put permanent financing on those 33 units. So what we will do is we'll go out and have him put those units into a land trust. And then after the units are in a land trust, then he can provide us with the buyers who would like to buy that property, or we'll solicit some. And as long as the buyer can qualify for the loan, whether they have any down payment or not, we don't care, because we have a benefactor who will put them on as co-signers on an account in escrow so that the escrow company can verify that there are aged funds, there are seasoned and sourced funds available.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the lender, usually the lenders we use, are not going to care about the buyer's aging. They're going to see that the buyer's been on that loan as a cosigner for at least 48 hours. But they are going to insist that the loan be aged or seasoned for probably anywhere from 4 to 6 months. And at that point, there's no question about the availability of the funds. Well, in escrow, then, the funds are transferred to the down payment money that is paid then to the trustee. The trustee then receives that down payment money and returns it back to the benefactor with a 6 or 8% interest rate, a pretty good chunk of interest to make in a short time.
Mm-hmm.
And then all of the remaining funds are then given to the person putting the transaction together, any real estate agent that might be involved, and then everything that's left over then goes back to the builder. So if the builder's not into the property too deeply, he can get his permanent financing arranged and get out from under it and still have a few bucks left rather than having to declare bankruptcy and get out of business.
There's got to be a lot of people in California that are in that situation, I would
think. Thousands.
Yeah. Well, we're going to start running that ad when I get back. I got a trip I'm going on, but I'm going to run that ad, and we'll probably be talking as I have those conversations.
Sure. Well, I would say that, you know, right now, one thing I think we should mention is the seminar that we're going to be doing together. It's going to be a 3-day seminar at the Los Angeles, that just says LAX. I don't know what the hotel is yet.
Okay. Well, we'll have it on the website, too.
Yeah, it's the 20th and 22nd, 20th, 21st, and 22nd. It'll be on both of our websites. Landtrust.net is mine. But, yeah, you and I are doing another 3-day job. And that's going to be great.
All right. Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned that. You know me. I don't. Oh, yeah. Supposed to promote something.
Well, if you're like me, I'd rather teach than sell anything.
Yeah, we do get into that. So that's good. Let's talk a little bit about the challenging of the PAC Trust as far as a lender finding out that transfer has occurred and them saying, I think we can foreclose on that due to due on sale clause. Yeah. I'm sure that's happened a few times, at least the attempt.
Yeah, it's happened with some of the major lenders, Countrywide being one of them. But the thing is, there's a letter that we send back saying, you know, you're kind of barking up the wrong tree or peeing on the wrong bush, as it were, because if you take a look at the Garn St. Germain law, you'll see that nothing has happened here that does violate your due on sale clause. The property was placed into a trust and being leased to one of the beneficiaries of the trust. There's no sale, there's no purchase, and there's no violation of any due-on-sale clause. And the only one who's ever challenged us on that is Countrywide, but after they challenged us, they came back and said, regardless of what you say, we see this as an unapproved transaction. So my letter back to them was, there is no such term unapproved in the Garn St. Germain law. It's unauthorized, and this transaction is fully authorized by the Garn St. Germain legislation, and they backed off. That was 3 years ago, and since that time, we've had virtually no contest on the issue. We had Countrywide funding, Washington Mutual, Nationwide funding, but they read my letter and realized that there hadn't been a due-on-sale violation.
You know, at this point, I can't imagine them wanting to take any more property back, no matter what the reason.
No, they don't want to take it back, but a lot of the lenders are so indebted to their investor market that if they get caught not taking a property back on a blatant due-on-sale violation, that they could lose their funding. That's the thing that I worry about.
Okay. Well, Bill, it's been educational as always and entertaining, and looking forward to our June event. Give us your websites again, please.
That's landtrust.net. www, of course, landtrust.net.
Okay, and there was another one that you gave us.
ProRealEstateSource.com, just like it sounds, ProRealEstateSource.com.
Bill, thank you again.
And, my pleasure, Bruce.
We'll be speaking to you probably before June, but we'll join you in June.
Oh, you bet.
Thanks again.
You've been listening to the Norris Group Real Estate Radio Show. For more information on the Norris Group, please visit www.thenorrisgroup.com.
Check out www.thenorrisgroup.com for upcoming live speaking engagements and education opportunities in May and June, including the Norris Group's REO Bootcamp, visit www.thenorrisgroup.com or call 951-780-5856 today for more information. 951-780-5856.